Hello, my name is Rob Ray, and I am a financial advisor from the Wealth Consulting Group here at UBS Financial Services, located in Farmington Hills, Michigan. I can be reached via email at robert.ray, R-A-Y, at ubs.com. Welcome to the 10 Spot, an approachable, unassuming podcast that explains various wealth management concepts in about 10 minutes. In this episode, we'll be discussing private credit. Now, this actually stems from a previous conversation with Barbara here in Michigan, talking about her portfolio, other asset classes to add for further diversification, and it was a fruitful conversation. I figured it was worth sharing with you. Now, before we get started, private credit, private types of investments, alternative investments are a very personalized, individual type of conversation. There's lots of unique risks, restrictions, investor requirements, suitability issues, all sorts of stuff. So this is certainly a personal conversation that you want to have with your financial advisor or with me, if you'd like. So certainly something to consider as we jump into the topic. Now, private credit. Credit. So you're going to hear the term credit used a lot in the next 10 minutes. Credit can be interchangeable with bond. So a bond is a loan from a company that you might get from a General Motors or a Microsoft, something like that. You can buy it in the secondary market, meaning you can buy it directly from the company when they first issue it, or anytime after. You could buy it from Bob or Susie if they're willing to sell it. So bond typically gets used now as credit because it's between two parties and it's not being traded or exchanged after being issued. So just some lingo to use. Private credit, what is it? It is a type of debt financing provided by non-bank lenders that's not issued or traded in the open market, right? So what I just mentioned. Why is this something that you'd want to consider? Well, private credit offers an attractive yield for investors looking to earn more interest, and it's a way to diversify their portfolio from traditional fixed income or bonds, hence the reason why I came up in my conversation with Barbara. Okay, so now we know what private credit is, essentially. Who's doing the borrowing? Well, companies, usually small to mid-sized, that often cannot or choose not to access public markets for debt financing, they're going to turn to the private markets. This can be for a variety of reasons, disclosures, timelines, underwriting costs, attorney fees, there's a lot of stuff that goes along with issuing a bond. As with most things, private credit comes in a variety of flavors. Some private credit strategies focus on generating high yields, so high interest, compared to what's available in public credit markets. Other strategies focus on capital appreciation of the underlying asset, the private credit, that the credit is backed by. So as I mentioned, private credit comes in a couple different flavors. Four that I'm just going to touch on very briefly. So you hear the names. The first is direct lending. This is the most popular one, so it'll be the one I reference a little bit later. But direct lending, or senior debt, involves loans made directly from the lender to a company to support either its growth, an acquisition, maybe it's buying another smaller company or competitor, or refinancing existing debt. These loans are typically senior in the capital structure, secured by collateral, which, remember the word covenant. We're going to come back to this in a little bit. And offer floating rate coupons. Floating rate means that instead of traditional bond where it pays a fixed percentage, like 5%, and it's just always going to pay 5%. These loans, the interest rate can fluctuate based on prevailing rates, which can be really attractive. A second type of private credit is called mezzanine debt. Mezzanine debt is subordinated debt that sits between senior debt and equity, so kind of a special spot in the capital structure. It's usually embedded with equity instruments attached to it to create upside. It carries more risk, but offers a higher potential return because of those equity components that they combine with the debt. A third type is venture debt. You might be able to guess where this goes. Venture debt are loans to, you guessed it, venture capital-backed companies by a specialized financier to fund working capital or capital expenses. Venture debt combines loans with warrants or other mechanisms to purchase equity to compensate for the higher risk of lending. The fourth is opportunistic or distressed credit. These are strategies that invest in financially troubled companies at a discount, usually on the secondary market. It carries the highest risk and return potential based on the successful restructuring of the company. So this is where they're looking for a company that's got its back to the ropes, and they can get a really good deal on the debt, restructure the company, and benefit from the appreciation of the debt and the company. And so now that you've got a little bit of lingo under your belt, a couple different types, why are you even talking about it? Well, private credit has grown in prominence over recent years, really stemming back to the global financial crisis, which we all remember. That led to new banking regulations that constrained lending by banks and thus opened space for non-bank lenders to step in. There was a need, somebody filled it. At the same time, interest rates fell. So everybody remembers how low interest rates have been up until recent history. And that almost in and of itself was pushing investors to seek higher yields, which really led to the boom of private credit. Now with this background, why are we talking about it? Prominence, it's coming around, diversifying a bond portfolio, higher yields, all that sort of stuff. What else? Why? A few reasons to consider it if it's appropriate. The first is that is usually floating rate in nature and therefore can be more attractive when interest rates are rising. So as interest rates have gone up, if you could imagine having bought something, a fixed income instrument like 2 or 3 years ago, it's paying a low rate. Now rates have gone up and you're sitting there with your hands up in the air like saying, what do? I got the old stuff. I want the new stuff that's paying higher rates. If I try and sell my low-yielding investment, nobody's going to buy it for what I paid for it because it's paying something less than what you can get today. So I'm going to have to sell it at a discount. Well, with a floating rate type of investment, that interest rate creeps up as rates go up, which protects you. Second, the private nature of direct loans and private credit mean that the investments are valued monthly, maybe quarterly, which reduces volatility on a day-to-day basis. So if you own, you likely own a bond mutual fund somewhere, or maybe you own a bond. The value of that is going to change based on what's going on in the public markets. People are buying, selling all the time, which means that the price is going to get updated on a relatively consistent basis. And the private markets, because these things don't trade, that price discovery doesn't happen on a day-to-day or minute-by-minute basis. So they go back and revalue or mark-to-market the value of the portfolio over longer periods of time, which means that the volatility in the price is smoother because it's only changing maybe once a month or maybe once a quarter, which again kind of provides a smoother and better return in highly volatile markets. Another aspect to consider, or why do investors compare the public and private markets, is in the public markets, it's just the promise to pay, right? And when you buy a bond or a bond fund or whatever in the public markets, all those companies that issue those bonds are just promising to pay. They're promising to pay the interest. And then eventually when the bond matures, they're promising to pay back the principal. In the private markets, you can request certain things on these loans, which brings in covenants. Remember, in the beginning of the podcast, when I mentioned we were going to come back to this word, a covenant. Debt covenants are agreements between the lender and the borrower. They're designed to protect the interest of the lender by ensuring the borrower remains financially stable enough to repay the debt. These are great things that can be added to these loans to add to the security of the loan. There's just like everything else, they come in a whole bunch of different shapes and sizes. Some quick examples are maintaining certain financial ratios. The lender may say you need to have a certain debt to EBITDA or an interest coverage ratio or something like that. There may be a restriction on additional debt. They may issue the loan and they say, by taking this loan, it prevents you from taking another loan that we don't know about it or approve. Right? So that's a way to safeguard to make sure that they don't get overextended. Another could be cash reserves. We're going to provide this loan, but you got to always make sure that there's X amount of money set aside in this account, something like that. A fourth might be just physical collateral. We're going to give you this loan. We want you to back it up by collateralizing or putting up your building, your land, maybe your equipment to repay the loan directly to us in case something happens. And the value of that collateral might well exceed the dollar amount of the loan. But again, that's a way to protect the lender. Now, private credit, there's a lot that goes into it. And as you can imagine, it's a pretty complex arena, which is certainly more than what can fit into an approximately 10-minute podcast. So there's lots of stuff together. But, the key takeaways of private credit, like direct lending, for example, is that it can provide higher yields than traditional fixed income. It can diversify your fixed income portfolio. It can smooth out the overall return volatility and return profile based on that monthly or quarterly mark-to-market. There are some unique considerations, right? Investor qualifications, suitability, liquidity. Private credit isn't the type of investment that you put money into and then you take out the next day or a week if you need some cash. There's usually longer-term investments that do have some restrictions when you can redeem money, maybe quarterly. There might be a percentage of money that can come out. These are all things to consider relative to the rest of your portfolio. There are defaults, where bad things happen to good companies. But the structure of the direct loans helps protect the principal, as I mentioned before. And so for investors willing to lock up capital and commit for an extended period of time, direct lending offers access to an asset class with enhanced yield and downside mitigation. Hopefully you found the past 10-11 minutes on private credit insightful, and I've been able to answer a few questions that you might have had on private credit, or maybe I made you think of some questions. As always, in any case, I sincerely appreciate you including the 10 spot on your playlist and sharing what you've learned with others. Please email me. That verbal mishap. Please email me with any follow-up questions, suggestions, or topic requests for future episodes at robert.ray, R-A-Y, at ubs.com. Thanks for listening, and have an awesome day. And now time for that post-podcast disclaimer. This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review the client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.